This week on The Chirp with Darren Millard, it is Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts. A whole bunch of hockey talk coming your way. Plus, how does John Klingberg, the general manager shuffle, the Jets playing neutral site games, and Edmonton's pursuit of a goaltender all tie into the new release of Spider-Man? It works. Trust me. It's coming up.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Huzzah! Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
What are you going to do?
Yes, it is the podcast that was created to entertain and inform you, and for another reason, for me to talk to my buddies. Sometimes we stray from that. Sometimes I try and find a new friend. It works. And sometimes I never talk to that person again. But in this case, it's Elliot Friedman, who I've worked with and been friends with for a long time. And he joins us in from 32 Thoughts. What's going on in your neck of the woods? Are y'all bundled up?
Yes, I was shoveling the other day. You know, so Lawless calls me every day, your buddy there from Lawless and Order. And he says, you know, what are you doing today? And I go, I'm out shoveling the driveway. And he goes, oh, it's 80 degrees here. I'm going golfing this morning. And I'm like, F you, Lawless. I hang up the phone. That's basically how it goes. The difference between Toronto and Vegas. You know, I have to tell you, Darren, it is amazing. Like, everybody I know who ended up like working for Vegas or being part of the broadcast crew there, it's amazing how happy you guys look in January and February compared to the rest of us.
It makes no sense. And I don't get it because we don't have entertainment. We don't have great weather. We don't have a good team to watch. I don't know how we survive it.
I know. Seriously, you guys should be getting danger pay. You really should. Danger pay for covering the Golden Knights.
We are in different times, and I'm going to lean on you for a few different things, but I also want to get to one story from that's kind of come full circle between the two of us. But what's happening in Edmonton? Like, what's the pre-playoff end game here?
So it's a great question. I spent a lot of time looking into that because they've got a few days off. They were supposed to play tonight, Monday night. They're not. They've got that game moved back to Saturday now. And, you know, I think that they're sitting there at the beginning of the year. I don't think anybody would have thought we would have woken up on a Monday morning in the second week of January and they would have been out of the playoffs. When they started 16-5, we're all sitting there thinking, okay, they're going to make it. And now the rest of the year is about figuring out what they're going to do. I think the way they're kind of looking at it is, okay, we're not as good as that team that was 16-5. But we also don't think we're as bad as the team that's won two games in its last 13. And the other thing too is, and this has happened to just about everybody, but now it's happening to them. You've got, you know, the COVID takedown right now. And it's not like Calgary where everybody gets it at once and you get all your games postponed. It's happening one guy here, a couple guys here, one guy there, a couple guys there. So when it rains, it pours. And I think that what we're trying to do right now, Darren, is just get through it. Just get through it and try to figure out where they are. Now, earlier in the year, Ken Holland did a radio interview with our buddy Bob Stauffer, and he said, if we're in the race, we'll trade our first rounder. Well, I heard last week he was asked about that by some other teams. Would you be willing to move your first? And now all of a sudden he's not willing to do it. Like, I think the thing that Holland is trying to do here is avoid making a panic move that makes things even worse. I think he wants to get through this. I think he wants the team to go through COVID. I mean, in terms of getting it out of the, not have it, but getting through it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things about COVID up here is that when you have it, you don't have to test for 90 days. So you kind of go through it and then find out what his team is. I don't think he wants to make a coaching change. Like, I think he's considered everything. I don't think he wants to make a coaching change that's happened too often in Edmonton. And I think the other thing too is he doesn't want to make a dumb trade. You know the goalies. I was looking around. Who's available that's a difference maker? You know, Halak, I don't think he wants to be traded, and he's got a no-move clause. Jake Allen's a guy there, but, you know, the other thing too is Edmonton's doesn't have a fourth rounder. Their second and third are tied up. So I think he kind of looks at it like, we have to solve this problem ourselves. We have to play better. And I know that's not an answer a lot of people are going to like to hear, but that's kind of where I think he's coming from.
I'm not sure that he can make a Jack Campbell type trade and sell it, where you acquire a goaltender who's on the cusp and you're trying to count on him to get you through.
Well, if Darren, if you're going to do that, you might as well give Skinner the shot, right?
Right. Yeah.
You have a guy like that. Mm-hmm. And I have wondered if Smith is not healthy, I wonder if Skinner gets more of a look.
You've been talking to my buddy Kevin Woodley again?
Yeah, Woodley tells me everything I need to know about goalies because God knows I don't know anything about them.
He's the guru. What are we going to do with the February schedule? When does that come out?
So some teams have seen their schedules, not all of them. Some teams have. I do believe there's teams playing as soon as Monday. The All-Star game this year, as you know, is on the Saturday, the sixth. And I heard there's teams playing as soon as the Monday.
So no real break.
It depends on how many games you need to play. Mm-hmm. Now some of these teams, like Toronto, like Ottawa, that have to play a lot of games. From what I understand, the teams and the players have said, we've had enough time off. We understand.
So the players have been amiable to that.
I think there's some guys who, would prefer they got that time off in February still, but they kind of understand that they've already, like Ottawa, look how much time they've had off. I think they get that they have to play. Are some people going to be disappointed that their winter vacation is going to be ruined? Absolutely. And I totally get that. But they recognize you got to play the game. So I think while the players aren't thrilled about it, they understand. But if you're a team, like you guys have played a lot of games, so you won't have as many to make up. But the teams that do have a lot of games to make up, I've heard they're going to be playing as soon as the Monday after the All-Star game.
And All-Star, we're full go ahead, right?
As far as I know, I think there is some grumbling about that from the players. I do, as far as I know, and I checked again last on Saturday, All-Star was being played. I heard there was a big conference call between the league and the Players Association about it on Friday. And as far as I can tell, there was no talk about postponing it and canceling it. So as it stands right now, I think it's happening. The real shame about it, Darren, is that, the reason there's an All-Star game this year is because of ESPN. Usually in Olympic years, you don't have one. And, the Pro Bowl was supposed to be played there. And I think ESPN had some big plans for NHL and NFL crossover, which could have been really good for the league and everything. Right. But it doesn't sound like that's going to happen now, unfortunately, just because of all the protocols that are going to be in place.
I just need to know, am I going to the All-Star or am I going to my shows on the Strip? I got to make plans.
I think you should plan. I know you've got a really busy social calendar, but I think you should expect to be working the All-Star game, yes.
Bergevin to L.A.
Yeah.
I saw that coming. The extension. Yeah. I didn't see the extension to Rob Blake coming.
Mm-hmm.
What did I miss?
First of all, I think Bergevin is still very interested in Anaheim. The impression I get right now, Darren, is that this is Mark Bergevin, he wants to work, he wants to be busy, he wants to keep his name out there. So he's in LA at least for the short term. Now, there have been some reports that he has a contract to be assistant general manager starting next year, but there's some dispute about that. So, we'll figure it out as it goes. What this is to me is that Bergevin wants to be in the game. He wants to work. He wants to be involved. LA's got a history of this kind of thing in terms of, Ron Hextall, Dean Lombardi kind of thing. Yeah. As you mentioned, there's a connection there, Luke Robitaille. However, when this happened last night, someone said to me, and this is someone I really trust, he said, don't jump to conclusions. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that he's going to be the guy to replace Rob Blake. Don't jump to that conclusion.
I
did initially too, especially when the release came out basically saying we're not going to talk about this. So you're sitting there going, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, now John Hovind reports last night, and I think John's right, that there's a long-term extension coming for Rob Blake. So I think that Bergevin is there. I think he's still going to go after the Anaheim job. I think that's a job he's got interest in. I think there's a lot of people with interest in that job. And we'll kind of see where everything lands at the end of the season before we figure this out.
And why I thought Bergevin might take over in LA was because there was stories that maybe Rob Blake didn't want to be the manager anymore. And he was going to step aside. And it was the natural sequence because I think Blake's done a great job.
I look at it this way. That team underwent a big rebuild. And what the biggest difference is, Darren, from when you and I started? It's that when we started, when you said big rebuild, it was 5 years.
Right.
Nobody's waiting 5 years anymore. You can't, in this day and age, you cannot wait 5 years.
Yeah. Rangers, so, right?
Exactly. Well, and that wasn't even intentional in some ways. They thought they were going to wait longer than they did. But teams run out of patience. Organizations run out of patience. Fans run out of patience. You got to be quicker. You know, they're battling for the playoffs right now. And I think that's kind of where we thought they were going to be, right? The other thing, too, is I did have someone say to me that this idea that Blake is ready to just walk away into the sunset doesn't make him very happy. And if you remember Rob Blake as a player, you don't want to deal with Rob Blake when he's not very happy. So
that hip check.
I heard he did want to stay, and obviously by the extension, he's staying.
I like that. Are you tired of talking about Evander Kane, or can I lean on you a little bit?
No, you can do it. I think we're going to be talking about it a lot.
So they grieve.
Yeah.
The Players Association.
Yeah.
What's your intel telling you about where this does end up?
I, you know, the tough thing about this is I learned this the hard way. You know, you can never predict what an arbitrator is going to do. You know, they might wake up in the morning and, you know, if they've had a bad night or their cup of coffee tasted terrible, they could screw up everybody's life. You know, my guess just from like, you know, I had some lawyers tell me that they think the Sharks in the league have a great case. I had other lawyers tell me that they don't think they have that great a case. But what everybody agreed with is they think there's too much on the line here not to have some kind of settlement. Like if you're Evander, like there's almost $24 million at stake here, right? I think it's actually just under 23. But, you know, if you're Evander Kane, do you want to risk losing all of that money? If you're the NHL, do you want to, and the Sharks, do you want to risk losing all of that money? And they think at some point in time, everybody's going to sit down here and is going to settle it and see what they want to settle it at. And the other thing too, is other teams are going to say, well, okay, what's going to happen to San Jose's cap? You know, are they going to have to put that money on the cap? I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, so that's where I think, you know, they're working together now to figure out how the appeal is going to go, the grievance is going to go, when it's going to get heard, how it's going to affect everything. The other thing they have to do is figure out ground rules in case, for argument's sake, he wins the grievance and then has two NHL contracts. You know, what's that going to do? So all of that is being worked on right now. I'm sure the thing about the ladder will be sorted out the next day or two. You know, as for Kane's future, I do think there's interest. I know because on Saturday, you know, people were texting me saying, you know, do you know what the rules are? Are teams allowed to sign them? Or are we allowed to sign them for argument's sake? And so that has to get worked out. I think there's also a buyer beware from some teams. I think there are some teams that will avoid it and not have anything to do with it. But I think there will be other situations where teams do look at it. Yes.
Short-term deal. Yeah. Why not take a chance if you can do it? Was San Jose just waiting though? Like we as parents go, we're just waiting for my kid to step over that line. And I know it's going to happen.
It sure looks like it in the sense that, look, there was one suspension earlier this year for the use of a fake vaccine passport. You know, Bob Bugner said on Saturday that they kind of decided that they were moving on regardless of what happened. So it sure looks like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're responsible for your own actions. And they have two things here. One about a flight to Vancouver, which they say he did not have permission to take. And two about returning a week late to the Barracuda. Now, Kane's disputing those things. And I don't purport to know right now who was right or who was wrong. But, you know, San Jose, if there's two things here, as one lawyer said to me, if there's two things here and not just one, you know, it sounds like they really did their job putting together evidence. We'll just see if it stands up.
Have you seen the new Spider-Man yet?
Not yet, because you can't have popcorn in the theaters here, and it's unfair to take my kid to a movie without popcorn.
I ask you that because you and I shared a Spider-Man experience with Nick Kiprios.
That's right, in the lockout.
During the lockout. And as soon as I saw it and then we were going to talk to you, I thought, I got to find out how this new Spider-Man show compares to the Broadway production.
Yeah, the Broadway, we had to leave at the halftime, right? Yes. Because stories were breaking. Man, that was such a great, you got to tell the story so everybody here knows what it is.
So it was during the lockout and it was near the end of the lockout, but we were reading the tea leaves and Kipper really wanted to go see the Spider-Man production, which was spectacular. Mm-hmm. And we decided to go, but I would only go if you were going to, when I heard that you were going to go, because we weren't working together then.
No, we were different companies. Yeah.
Different companies.
Yeah.
But as soon as I heard that you were willing to go, I was like, all right. And ended up like Spider-Man was right beside me in the aisle and he was flying all over. It was great. But then, yeah, then we had to leave halfway through. I never saw the end. I don't have any clue how it ended.
Spider-Man 1.
Oh, somebody could have told me that a few years ago. When was that?
2013.
And then the lockout ended, I believe, that night, right?
Yes, I believe that was right around the time it did. Yes, I think that was true. It was early January 2013.
You can't have popcorn, eh? I got in trouble for having my phone, for checking my phone for messages by the security, the usher.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
that actually happened? That's great.
Yeah, it came down and busted.
Right. Theaters, I don't even know what's open or closed right now, but at the time it came out, I wanted to take my son to go see it, but you couldn't eat in the theaters. And a movie without popcorn for him, it's like child abuse. So, you know, I can't do that.
You ever smuggle in your own snacks?
Can this be used against me?
We do. Yeah. All the time.
No, I think my son would have a problem with that. He likes the whole idea of he gets the snack at the event.
At the event.
Yeah. I've got a very demanding child.
We stopped taking cans in though after they and people would look at you. Like, what the heck's going on? Hey, how serious were the Jets about moving some games to Saskatoon?
It was real. When they sent out, I heard rumors about it a couple days in advance. I couldn't confirm it. And then they sent out that survey to their season ticket holders. And I got my hands on it. And that's when I kind of figured out, I got confirmation of what was going on. So someone told me the day they sent that out. And of course, as you know, Darren, you try to confirm these things. You try to confirm these things. You throw it out there. And then all of a sudden, everybody calls you back, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Now they think they're protected because the story's out there. So apparently that day that they sent out the survey, which was last Thursday, there were like 7 or 8 hours of meetings that day, like by Zoom with the Saskatchewan and the rink about, you know, how they could make it happen, right? And then I just think that there were a couple of things here. Number one, not enough of their fans were in agreement, although it wasn't really in any one way. They just were hoping for a bigger number. Number two, I heard the Jets were told that if there were any extra costs in terms of travel or upgrading the SaskTel Center to NHL readiness in terms of internet and replay facilities, the Jets were going to have to pay it. And the other thing I was told was that, you know, you look at what's happening right now with Djokovic at the Australian Open, you know, someone says yes. And then when the consequences start, everybody runs for cover and nobody wants to admit they're the one that said yes. So I think there was a little bit of nervousness about that too. The top medical doctor in Saskatchewan that day had said no gathering. So, you know, I understand. I think they were talking about the 25th and the 27th, which I think were against Vancouver and Florida. I think those were the games they were discussing. And, but I, you know, like I can't fault them, you know, you can't fault people for trying to have an idea.
I had heard Montreal was exploring it in Florida.
That one I never heard. I mean, they were just there. So,
yeah,
but like, I think what it shows you is just, I don't know if desperation is the right word. Maybe it is, mm-hmm. But I think what it shows you is just the level of concern that the Canadian teams have about, you know, about their finances. And, you know, for the league too, I think what 35% of the revenue comes from Canada. You know, that's a big concern, big concern.
Orlando was the place that I had heard, mm-hmm. and maybe playing some games there with all the snowbirds and so forth. And so.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I asked if there'd be...
I don't report much anymore. So no, there's one for you. I find people are much more willing to tell me things now that I don't report a lot. Yeah.
Uh-oh, Friedman's calling. Oh, I hate that guy. Oh, Millard. Okay, I'll take that one.
Who's the best team that doesn't get enough attention? Carolina, Florida, or Nashville?
I would say of those three teams, like, I think the respect is really flowing in for Carolina and Florida. I hear a lot of people talk about what a good team Florida is. I hear a lot of teams talk about what a good team Carolina is, although maybe not as much as they like. I would say Nashville this year because generally – in the last couple seasons, Nashville hasn't been to the same level as those other teams. And I think we're still trying to figure out, what they are. That game, that was a great game that they played against you guys last week. And the one guy I think definitely does not get enough credit, deserves more of it, is Saros. Mm-hmm. Last year I thought he got shafted in the Vezina voting. This year, not only is he a Vezina guy, but he might even be like a Hart guy. And he's been spectacular. And I would say Nashville simply because they haven't been on the level of Florida and Carolina the last 2 years.
What's the Andrew Burnett? Like, where does that go?
Well, the one thing I did was I asked Bill Zito not long after Burnett got the job, what are you thinking here? And he said, I want to give him a runway. Mm-hmm. What he said was, it's an emotional time and I don't want to rush into anything. I don't get the sense that they're looking for any external candidates right now. I think that it stays this way, barring a situation where Joel Quenneville comes back and coaches. I think that Brunette, and I don't even know if that's even possible right now. I think Brunette gets the rest of the season. I don't like the way Florida's going. Why would you mess with that?
Mm-hmm. We got a lot of interim guys right now.
I was saying to Merrick last week, do you remember a time where there were four GM positions open during the season?
Most of all time, mid-season. Yeah. Might be most of all time out of season.
I kind of think there's been more than that before, but I mean, four GM jobs in season and, two of them, the seat of power is kind of above the GM, at least right now in mm-hmm. Vancouver and Montreal. But the other thing too is that I think we're all trying to figure out, what teams are willing to give permission during the season. Like I do think Pittsburgh has given permission to Alvin and Scott Young and some of the guys that Rutherford knew there to talk to Vancouver. Obviously I think guys like Matthew Darche and Daniel Briere and Luongo have been given permission to talk to Montreal. But that is one thing I've heard, is that some teams are very leery of losing too much brain power in the middle of a season. I think that Anaheim job in particular, Darren, I think there's a lot of people angling for that job.
Patrick wants the Montreal job.
Yes, and I believe he met with them. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they say to him, you're not going to be the GM, but would you want to work here? That's what I'm wondering if they say that to him, like in a different role.
I don't see that happening. Do you?
My initial reaction is the same as yours, but if he wants to get back in, like I just try to think of it. What if I was in Patrick Waugh's shoes? If I want to get back in, do I have to say, okay, I'll do this as long as I feel my opinion's going to be heard? Maybe I don't have the voice, but I have a voice. You've got to convince people that you can work in that structure, right? So why not? But yeah. I'm not Patrick Waugh. I have 500 less victories.
That means you've got 51.
That's right. I've got 51 victories, but they're all in my driveway. I don't have four Stanley Cups either.
Speaking of like Patrick Waugh, I'll segue over to Team Canada. Did you ever hear anything about where Team Canada was going for their goalies? Should the NHL have gone?
Have you seen Doug Armstrong making the media rounds lately?
Yeah.
Like he's basically been like, someone says, was this guy on the team? And he's like, oh yeah, I'm just answering yes to everything. I think it's one of the funniest things I've seen. Yeah. Really. I think Price was one, if he was ready to play. Mm-hmm. I think Binnington was another. And so the answer is no, I don't know, but I think it would have been some combination of Price, Binnington and Fleury. If Price was ready to play, and if not, my guess is it was going to be Hart, but I don't know that for sure.
John Klingberg, he kind of backtracked a bit, but it's kind of then said, yeah, he does feel a little disrespected. I can't imagine that he would have been moved 3 years ago, mm-hmm. but now, wow.
See, the tough thing here is, Darren, is that, so Dave Pagnotta had the story mostly right. It sounds like this is an issue of semantics as opposed to anything else. I think what happened was If you look at Dallas, they have a couple of long-term deals there for guys who are in their 30s or around their 30s in Ben and Sagan. And I don't think the Stars have any issue with Ben and Sagan in terms of signing the deals and you know, the way they try to compete and how hard they work, but both of their bodies have broken down in some ways, right? And yeah. And I would bet that, and they're just not available all the time, or they can't be as effective as you'd like all the time because their bodies have been through so much. And I think that's the reason that Dallas did not go to where Klingberg wanted to go. Like, I've heard Klingberg somewhere is asking somewhere around 8 years at just under $8 million. So I just think that the Stars have said, look, we've kind of gone through this with Ben. We're going through this with Sagan. We're worried not about your ability or your desire or your love for Dallas. We're worried about the health of your body. And we just don't want to do that at that level. And if you're a player, like, even like, people will listen to this and there'll be people who say, that's the right thing to do. That's the right call. I can't blame Dallas for that. But when you're on the receiving end of that message, you don't care if it's the right thing. You sit there and you say, I have spilled so much blood for this team and I've tried so hard for this team. You feel like you're hurt and you're insulted. So, like, I see what's happening here. I kind of understand what everybody's thinking, but I also understand why Klingberg would sit there and say, this is not acceptable to me. Because as a player, you're sitting there and you're saying, man, I don't think, like, you look around, you see other guys got paid. I'm not getting paid. You feel terrible. And it's a hard thing to do, but it happens sometimes. And I understand why Klingberg feels the way he does. My question, though, Darren, is if I'm Dallas, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, all right, how are we going to trade? We still want to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They're still, to me, a team. If you get the playoffs, they're going to be trouble to deal with. How do we trade John Klingberg and not make our team worse? Like, I think Dallas is going to be one of the most fascinating teams because at the deadline, if they want, they could move a Klingberg, they could move a Pavelski, they could move a Holtby, and I think they do very well. But, you know, we got to see where they are first.
Forsberg too, right? Like, I can't imagine they'd ever move him.
No, I got to think if you're in Nashville, you got, I mean, I'm sure Nashville, but the Nashville, it's the same thing. They're looking at Johansson and they're looking at Duchesne, and both of whom are having rebound years, and they're thinking the exact same thing. But the one thing about Forsberg too is that's a guy, you know, that's right. I got to think somehow that one gets worked out. I could see the market too not being happy with the Predators if Forsberg walks after this kind of a year he's having.
Before say goodbye to you, I like the new desk where the camera walks. Who's the camera person that's strolling around you guys?
There's different ones for different nights, but one of them, his name is Scott.
Okay.
And, you know, so you'll like this story. So they asked me if I wanted to move. So the bald spot.
No.
Yeah, they did. They said
I didn't bring it up because of that. I just like the setup. Oh, I think it's great that you guys all get this.
We've known each other a long time. I knew what you were setting me up.
No. Yes. I'm honestly not doing that.
I just want everybody out here listening to this thing. Darren and I have worked together. We've known each other for a long time. He can say he's innocent and he wasn't going for the bald spot, but he was definitely going for the bald spot.
You guys can look at each other.
They asked me. Like, because they saw the stuff on Twitter, like people are posting pictures of my bald spot and saying, tough luck, Elliot. And I, you know, especially during the pandemic, I love all this stuff because it gives people something to laugh about. So they said to me, do you want to move? And I said, you know what? No, I don't care. Like, I'm married. I've got nobody to impress with the way I look. Like, you know, I just said, because they actually like the way it looks in certain ways. I said, you don't have to bend to me on this one. And whenever I get tweets of people saying, oh, Elliot, tough luck, or this must make you angry, I just laugh. I don't care at all. I don't.
I was going to ask you if you did get a pick who you sat beside or who you looked at. Because there's one of my problems with TV is we all sit in this row, but we never get to look at each other. And you guys actually did it right.
Mm-hmm. And they also, the other thing too, is the tables now, it's sort of like a chevron a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you can actually turn and you don't have to look like all the way over there. Like you can just kind of turn and see the person.
better, way better than Zoom when you guys were all sort of in the same room. But
well, if you saw Saturday night, it's back. Like we have to.
I didn't see Saturday night.
Yeah, so we're all in our own boxes now, and so Kevin and Ron shared one desk, and Jennifer and I shared another desk, but we have to be spaced out right now.
Wow. Are you? By the way, Steph must really appreciate that you said you have nobody impressed anymore.
She's heard it all. She just rolls her eyes. She's like, oh, thanks. Thanks. My feelings are so such a major concern to you. That's actually a pretty good day. That's funny.
What a great outpouring of support from our community for Teddy. Like, just so heartwarming and authentic, right?
Yeah, you know, I know the sport is going through a rough time right now, but you know, there's a lot of good here. There's a lot of good people here, Darren. You know, I've been in sports media. I mean, we've both been in sports media a long time. For me, it's been, I think this, I'm coming up on 29 years, and you know, I wasn't the greatest athlete, and I wasn't the most, when I was younger, I was too wimpy a competitor, really. But I've learned so much about what it takes working in sports and working in hockey. I've learned so much about what it takes to succeed on a daily and consistent basis. And I've learned that there's a lot of generosity here. And I really do feel that. I know we're going through a tough time right now, but I think there's a lot of good in it, and I think there's a lot of great people in it. And I think that's just proof of it.
Teddy passing away after a tragic accident in his game, grade 10 student. So terrible news there. 29 years. What do you know now that you had no idea that you knew year number one?
You know what it honestly is? It was something I just alluded to there, Darren. It's how hard it is to be good every day.
Yeah.
You know, like we're, you know, the job we do, anything we do bad, everybody sees it. Mm-hmm. And that's not for everyone. That's for sure. It's not an easy thing. And I counsel people on that all the time. But, you know, like how many times do you walk away after a show and you did, like, I know you, like I've seen nights where you do 97,000 great things. And there's like this one small thing, and it just,
yeah,
like it eats you alive.
Yeah.
Right. It eats you alive. And I'm like, Millard, you just had a great show. Don't focus on one thing. But I think all the best are like that, right? And I think that's the thing I've learned is that, I look at, like, to play 82 games a year plus the playoffs to win a Stanley Cup, you know, how many nights, so let's just say if you play 82 and then you say a max 28 playoff games, so you play 120 games. Like, you know, okay, maybe you're allowed to have 5 or 10 bad nights, maybe. Yeah. But the best of the best, they're showing up for, they're having a big night or a hard night, 120, like Sidney Crosby, he gets no nights off.
No.
Connor McDavid, he gets no nights off. All those great players. And that's the thing that I think I've learned, like even in broadcasting, you know, if you want to be at the top, you can't have too many nights off.
Yeah, I in watching the same team every night, that's one thing I appreciate too, is how consistent some guys are.
Yeah,
it's just amazing.
Like Pietrangelo, I've been watching him a lot this year. Yeah, like just every night he brings it.
He was their best player without scoring points, as he was when he was scoring points later on. Like it's freaky how good he is and how consistent he is. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. What happens now? Like, what's the next step in Elliot Friedman's day?
Well, this is a busy day. I've got in 20 minutes. I got Jeff Merrick's show to do here in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I've got another podcast I got to do today. And we have to tape an interview for our podcast today, and I'm writing 32 thoughts for tomorrow. So it's a bit, Mondays are busy. Mondays are probably my busiest day of the week.
I was shocked you fit us in. And all seriousness, knowing a little bit about your early week schedule,
mm-hmm.
I'm impressed. I feel really blessed right now.
Well, you know what? This is not lawless. Okay, like this is the big time. So
he calls you all the time, doesn't he?
But you know, I love Gary. He's like, I love my chats with Gary because, you know, this I get my rundown. Okay, Elliot, this is what you did good this week, and this is what you did terrible this week. So if I don't have my weekly review from Lawless, I just don't think I can function.
So Gary and I do the TV in Vegas, and he was in COVID protocol, and yeah. He was giving me like segment by segment air checks by text, segment by segment.
I'll get like, it's so funny. I'll get texted. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, I'm like, what the hell's going on?
We all need people like that in our lives. Yeah.
And then Shannon's texting over. So I've got talk about 97% right and 3% bad. I'm 3% right, 97%. I'm standing in the hallway at T-Mobile Arena. This has been tons of fun. For those that want to crack down on more with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts and all the stuff in Hockey Night in Canada. A new episode drops when
the podcast just dropped this morning, and the blog will be tomorrow sometime.
Blog will be tomorrow. As Doug McLean always said, I'd like two thoughts, three thoughts.
Well, I think Doug was also one of the guys who said, he said it's 15 thoughts drawn out to 32. and Berkey used to call it 32 turds. That's what Berkey calls it.
Do you have to get new merchandise all the time, every time the NHL adds a team?
I said that to the commissioner once. I said, can you stop expanding? These extra thoughts are killing me.
It's hockey for hockey people, and it's certainly a lot of fun to have you on here. If you would appreciate it from our end of it, everybody listening, hit the like button, share it on social media, and I hope you enjoyed it. It's Elliot Friedman on The Chirp with Darren Millard. Thanks, Elliot.
All right, Darren, have a great day, my man.
And we'll talk to the rest of you next week on this podcast that is all about just hanging out with buddies with a little bit of hockey talk. Thank you.